is your very deep Dr. Tar.
This is Professor Feather.
This is the Midnight Gadfly.
This is Dr. Head.
And this is Slim Bacon.
And you are experiencing... Hello, fellow inmates, and tonight we're going to be getting a little claustrophobic. Hey, Midnight Gadfly? Yes, we are going to get down and deep and dirty with The Descent. That's right. Now, we're going to do some spoilers because this movie is 20 years old. So, The Descent is a 2005 British horror film written and directed by Neil Marshall. I bet some of us might know other things that Neil Marshall has done. Gadfly?
Is he a musician?
I don't know. No, no. Zislin Bacon?
I didn't know this was going to be a quiz.
I've seen his name in credits, and I'm blanking.
Well, he did Dog Soldiers, which yes, as well as Doomsday from 2008, which I
Doomsday,
thought was very,
that's
very, and he also did Hellboy. So, 2019, the most recent.
I didn't know that. Where I'm remembering
the new one. Yeah,
David
so
Harbour, Hellboy.
Yeah. This is another one of the film, and this is about six women or friends who are cave divers, spelunkers, and they enter an uncharted cave system.
And they always do.
Yes, yes, they're all uncharted.
But, okay, now wait a minute. Now you're getting way ahead. Because that beginning...
Well, I'm giving them the overview.
But
if we're going to... If we can walk step by step, Professor Feather, let's go with that. Striking beginning.
It has so much determination of why they're in these caves, you know? And it's because they're all adventurers, you know?
That's right. They're
spelunkers.
But they also have... Dun, dun, dun! The big secret!
Right. Boy, Dr. Tar, right to the inciting incident. No foreplay, no nothing.
No, that's Feather.
Professor Feather.
Or Dr. Tar, or Professor.
Yeah,
Feather, or Gadfly.
It's like a split personality, actually.
Yeah.
No. I had to get stoned.
No, I just think that beginning.
Hang in with me.
You see them on a canoe trip. They're rafting. And that's one of the things I love about this movie is it tells you without telling you, shows
right,
you.
Right. They're obviously a group of adrenaline junkies, but as girls.
Yeah, and they go out, and then the big secret, as we know, there might be something unseemly going on with Sarah and then her husband and one of Sarah's friends, Juno.
So they're all like execs anyway, right? Affluent people, right? To have this apparently capital to do all this.
Right, to travel the world every year, pick a new spot.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Extreme adventure.
I think I was focused on other things, you know, like
they reminded me of like a female version of Deliverance at the beginning.
Just the beginning? Wait a minute.
Well, you know, the whitewater rafting,
sliding down into a big blood pit. Oh, we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
And
you sure got a pretty mouth. All you girls have pretty mouths, right? And that's what, right?
No, we just have bad.
I was talking about the crawlers.
Because of the incident that happens, you know, the horrendous incident.
Yes.
All done very graphically and, you know, very well. I have to say,
it's startling. You don't expect that.
I think the beginning. Right. The beginning impressed me more than any of the rest of the movie, to be honest. That's why I guess
the setup for it.
The setup. I like the setup way more than I like the actual plot.
I do like the premise. I did like the premise of
that. But anyway, to get back to that, you know,
right,
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. Well, we see, yes, Sarah has there's an accident, as you said, very graphically depicted, where her husband and her daughter are killed.
With pipes to the head.
With pipes, yeah, as a car accident. And fast forward.
Give the new meaning to.
Well, there's a scene at the end where they're zugging and in the hospital, and she's out and sharing the news with her friends, and Juno turns and kind of walks away. And then we fast forward a year. And this is kind of like the first time that the girls have been together since that horrific accident. Because you see this, the incident, right? And they want to go celebrate and try to get back the way they were, which adventuring girls who did these things together and risked life and limb. Now, cave diving is a whole crazy kind of sport that someone like me is just not going to be cut out for. Sorry. It's just, you know, I have wide load I have across my chest and back.
I see you more as a jungle guy.
Swinging through the trees in the jungle. I agree.
Yeah, that. Yeah. Or lying low and waiting, picking the rotting fruit, you know? I'm not climbing all the way up there. Come on, man. Look at me.
That's true.
Dr. Head, Lord of the Apes.
Are there cranes inside of the cave?
No, he's the master of who flung poo. Yeah.
Well, yeah, who organized this?
We have Juno. We have this organized this and all the girls' names are Sarah, Juno, Beth, and Sam, Rebecca, and Holly, who is Juno's protege.
And Juno seems very, very alpha, or at least she wants to be the alpha.
Yes. Well, you can show that she's clearly marking her territory when she lifts her leg up as a stretch. I'm like, oh, okay. Like something in me tore when I watched that, but I was like, good for you, Juno. So they are driving, and they want to explore this cave, but one of them's complaining, oh, that's a tourist trap. You know, that's the tourist state. It's not an adventure. And we see as they get out, oh, here's where it is. Juno casually tosses the book about that cave system in the trunk of her car. And then they make their way to the cave. And then would anyone else like to take over from here? Dr. Tarr?
No, go ahead.
Someone else, go ahead. They get to the cave and they, you know, do the big folderol about safety, blah, 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 you know, typical stuff. And then they start descending into the cave.
But it's pretty well unknown cave, it's uncharted.
Right, they're like,
yes.
And you also... What I
know, at least by outsiders.
No,
I mean,
no, yeah, yeah, no, by anybody, really. I mean,
right, yeah.
You know, it doesn't even seem to be on hardly anybody's radar for some reason.
And what I noticed as like the first obvious shady thing outside of Juno throwing the guidebook into the trunk, it was compounded with like when they were driving to the cave site or where they were parking, the Scottish girl was nervous. And they were telling her, oh, it's just a little level two. It's nothing. And then Juno tosses the book away. So, you know, she can't learn what it is. That's way worse than level two.
And thus her fear represents Gadfly.
That's right.
She didn't disappear for long stretches of the movie. That character.
Such a good element. Nope. It played into that so well, though. I did like that. Alien did the same thing.
Yes,
the crawling the narrow space through the air ducts. Well, that was actually the Terror from Beyond Space. But
yes,
claustrophobic.
But Alien done well.
Right. Yes. And the shots were used. I love that. It does have that layer. There's multiple layers of horror here, and that's one of the many layers, is the effect of claustrophobia.
Even the sound effect for the mutants down there was like a skittering sound, just like in Aliens. Before you saw anything, you heard like a skittering because of the claws on the metal.
And before going further, I like the creatures. I thought they were well done. I thought that was a good you kind of believed it's kind of like Bone Tomahawk, you
right
know, with this subspecies that's been cut off.
Well,
you know,
it does have that similarity. it ends there, but it does have that.
Well, but you know what I mean? It's like a
I know what you mean.
Some kind of humanoid thing that thing cut off.
This is not official.
Devolved to acclimate to the subterranean. Features.
Like the rat teeth.
They are. There's definitely a rodent kind of.
And a very Lovecraftian type thing, too.
The kind of slimy, general kind of slime cast of their skins. Yeah. Trolls, they were very, ghouls, really kind of. And how dirty they were. I like that. Well, they weren't clean. They were all covered in dirt. And they would be crawling around a cave, it's like, oh, yeah, you're going to get shit all over you, you know?
Yeah, bat shit. It's just like, they'd be nasty. And if you got bit by one, that'd be like, just the infection itself would kill you.
Anyway, they start going into the cave. And they start going deeper, and it starts getting more and more claustrophobic until it gets to the point where it's extremely claustrophobic, because it focuses on who goes first.
What's Holly?
Yes.
Yes, the new girl.
Yes,
and Juno can't control her.
Yes.
She just like runs ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Slow down. But then she gets into that tight, that's the claustrophobia. That's where
my own personal
claustrophobia came into play right at that moment. You know, when she starts going into that,
we are the room,
that tight space, I said, fuck this. And I started fast forwarding.
Fuck Dr. Head.
Oh, I bet.
I fast forwarded through most of that because I went in my head. I'm a postmodern man. I went in my head, seen this, been there, done that, know about it. Get the fuck out of my head. Bam, bam. If I could have fast forwarded even better, I would have. If I would have known markers, because it just fucking freaked me right the fuck out. It's just not what I wanted to see.
So or Gadfly at that moment where she got stuck, the camera would have just saw little puffs of smoke, like when the Roadrunner takes off.
That's about what it was. I'm moving
on. The movie plays in that well. It does it well.
And I'm not criticizing the movie.
No. I know
I'm
you're
not. Criticizing the movie yet.
Because it takes a while for the other horror to come up.
I think up to this, it's really fucking scary. This is something that makes me do that. That's a scare. I'm scared, you know? I don't want to see that. And I'm, you know, I do fast forward to it. I have that beauty. Now, if I'd have been sitting in the theater watching this, you know, I had a whole another reaction. I'd have probably been breaking out in sweat. although being in that bigger theater probably would have been okay.
The tingler seats, too.
It'd be cool if they lowered the ceiling down. Yeah. You know, drop ceiling. This is lower.
They did it well. I have to give him credit. Go ahead.
They need skeletons flying over them.
Gadfly can talk to this ceiling feeling as of claustrophobic, please.
Yeah, I have very weird triggers for claustrophobia, and that's one of them. Even just like when you mentioned the descent, and I'd only read about it, I just got real nervous. I was just like, kind of like, oh shit. Should I just be like, I'm not gonna participate? And I'm like, nah, I'm gonna power through it. I'm just gonna make sure. But I got to that point where they started crawling into that tunnel, which here's the difference between that and Alien. Alien is going through a tube designed for a person to crawl through it that is even, and they're not going to get stuck, you know. And this is underground where things could collapse, and they did at some point.
inevitable.
Well, I left when
this
they
is
started.
After all a video game.
It was foretold.
Yeah, I when they started going through that first narrow tunnel, that's when I freaked out and I left the room. I didn't pause it, so I thought I would just listen to it. And then when the lady got stuck, I ran back into the room and hit fast forward.
That's visceral. That's a visceral reaction.
Yeah,
well, it makes perfect sense.
You've all been in a car with me. I get this way if I'm a passenger in a car, and I especially get this way if I'm a passenger with a full car. I will have a panic attack at some point, you know, because I have no control and I'm stuck in a small space with a bunch of people.
especially people I know.
It doesn't matter. It's irrational.
Right.
I know. Like when we were going up to Michigan, I came over and you're like, no, I No, it's, I drive. I don't let anyone. I'm not a passenger. I'm like,
it's completely irrational. It's completely irrational, and it's
no, but it helps you though. Yeah. You know, if that's all it takes, I'm like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
but anyway,
yeah. I would like to bring back to the cave.
This is a good one.
can I bring something up that we did? We missed. I don't think I didn't hear anybody mention that Juno is obviously after Sarah's husband. Like, there's something between those two.
I did mention it very early on, first scene when they're getting out of the rafts.
Okay, yeah,
like it's
obvious.
And then when Sarah tells. Or when Sarah's being told that her husband and daughter died, you see Juno crying at the news of the husband's death, and then turning and walking off.
Also the idea that there was about to be some sort of a reveal in the car before the husband and wife died, because he's very distant, and she mentions that, and that's when he almost gets distracted, and then all of a sudden that's when that whole thing happens. So I thought that's a really important inciting event. So I missed that somebody said it. So sorry,
that was cool.
Reliving my Vietnam moment.
Thunder.
My rodeo clown moment. You're in the barrel. Right. You're in the barrel.
Yeah.
This man is playing the part of a white man in a podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. So after the claustrophobic moment of relief, and then the next layer of horror comes in. There are creatures in this cave that they are savage and fast, and they attack in swarms, and they like to tear people apart and eat them alive.
And very comfortable where they're at, by the way.
They're
very fluid through the place. So
they move around, and we learn things about these creatures. We learned that they listen to sound. Sound is what attracts them because they're blind, because they've been, perhaps some throwback that's been in these cave systems for thousands and thousands of years and has devolved, perhaps. But that's
Sweeney Todd.
Yes.
Become like human bat hybrid.
Yeah, I got a lot of bat sensibility about them, even almost when the nose.
Yep.
Yeah. But
Grandpa Gregor on the bats.
Yeah, but hearing the echolocation, which made perfect sense in that subterranean, the echo chamber they were in. Yeah, I love the creature design. It was not what I was expected. I love how ferocious they are, the grimy look about them. They're dirty, filthy, but they were really, kind of a devolved human,
And it kind of gets you to think, exactly like their ecosystem. What actually sustains all of them, though? I mean, there would have to be something else down there that they're eating, you know what I mean? Something fairly big?
They go to the surface.
You
saw all those skulls. You saw those skulls in there. I don't know where would they, maybe hunted at night.
So they're the ghouls and stuff of ancient.
Now you're getting into the total fucking ridiculousness of the rest of this plot. I'm serious. Because these creatures, they look great. Ecologically, they cannot fucking survive. They could not survive.
That's what I'm saying. I don't
care what you say. They could not survive down there. So all of a sudden, an element of pure imagination based in no fact that you could come up with, you have these creatures. I will give you that. Okay, we've got these creatures. Somehow they've adapted to this situation through hearing. Okay, move on with your plot, and I'll continue with my criticism of why I don't like it from this point on. Go ahead.
Where'd that room full of skulls come from?
Well, not only that. When the final girl escapes, which we'll get into it more, but if you notice, she's climbing. It almost looks like a ramp, but I got the impression that was just literally a mountain of nothing but bones, which would take years and years to accumulate that many bones to get out of a cave that's that
vertical. But they don't really explain that, so is that...
Do they come out at night?
Cannibalistic?
Because before that, what we see, remember what happens, right? They see that painting in the wall that kind of shows that there are two exits out of the cave.
Right.
So, perhaps, Yeah, perhaps they do their hunting at night. No moon. I don't know. We don't know that much about the creature.
Is that what they call ghouls and all that stuff? You but know,
we do see.
It's supposed to be in Romania, right? Vampires or whatever they want to call them.
Right, but those cave systems are in Appalachia in the United States because, like, when they're going and it says, welcome to Chattanooga. Oh, I thought they were. Sorry. And there's a title card that says yes. Appalachian Mountain.
Yes, yes.
So those guys, when they come out of my, might be called Billy Bob.
Yeah, we do see we see an elk skull in the one cave, right? And then they even say they must go out at night and hunt for stuff on the surface and bring it back in. Which, if they're out in the middle of, if they're out in the night, their sonar is not going to work or whatever the fuck it is. You know, there's no way they're going to get out there and not be just confused as fuck to be hunting those kinds of animals and stuff.
You don't think they'd have like an elevated sense of smell as well?
Let's say they do. Let's say they have a very elevated sense of smell. They also have a very elevated sense of hearing, right?
Right. It's going to drive them crazy.
Let's go back to the point where the women are lying prone.
Right.
And they're hovering right atop of them. But if we remain perfectly still, it's not going to hear us. Oh, I can't.
Especially if you're like an animal that
she's got to breathe. She's got a heartbeat. This is an elevated
hopping vampire
creature.
Stuff.
Why does that elevated creature did not hear her heartbeat? It did not smell her.
Maybe it can't hear the low range. It only hears the
low range. No.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
It only hears high range.
That's what I said. It got in.
They've been crunking too long for
very ridiculous. Yeah. It becomes a video game from this point on.
It would be sensitive to heat, everything. It's literally going to heat anything that it finds.
The torch thing is what was the seller for me. Like the other ones, I'm like, there's no way. And then like the one crawls on the lady's head and is touching her head while it's crawling over it, and they're like, I don't feel any heat. But
that would be stupid because touch would be like a good
That's what I said. But here's the thing:
what
you're
saying.
I think you're just
right. Is like, why is this rock blinking?
Yeah, you're just. This to me looked like. Yeah, I don't know. It just looked like it was not.
It looks good, but when you kind of dissect it like this, that's pretty stupid.
I think that's the whole object.
Whoever wants to
watch this movie isn't really looking at it intellectually. They're looking at it as a joyride. You know, this is a fun ride.
And the movie does what it's supposed to do. It does.
It absolutely does.
Horror.
I like the movie. I just like the movie.
Horror doesn't have to be rational, whereas science fiction tends to be more rational.
Right.
Because horror taps into our nightmares, you know, the nightmare realm, which makes no sense.
Sci-fi.
Well, yeah.
Sci-fi can be horrific, but as a genre, I'm talking about genre defining.
Let's get off of that, because there are really good horror movies out there that are very well written, very well directed, and this is not one of them.
Right?
No, I'm just talking genre.
It's a B movie, and I like it.
I had a great time with it. I remember watching it with my grandma because we used to love watching horror movies.
Remember you say that? Yeah.
And that's she good. Goes. She was talking to those girls. She goes, "Them girls better
what
not go
in." What was
that
about the bats in the cave, Grandma?
Them girls better not go in that cave. And so I don't know what's going to happen, Grandma. And I knew because I'd seen it.
Yeah, I love this movie.
The claustrophobia got to her because she started rubbing her blanket. And she's like, them girls better get out of that cave. When the monster showed up, she's like, well, I told them girls to get out of that cave. I go, I know, Grandma. They wouldn't listen to you. Otherwise, they'd probably be all right. Yeah.
And then the poor man.
She loved it. She thought it was great fun. Nothing scared her, man. She was a trooper.
I went through the war. Really good in theaters, in a pitch black room on a 70-foot screen, and even in that wide of a space, it was claustrophobic as hell sitting in a theater watching it.
With wet noodles falling from the ceiling.
That's how they do the 40X for it.
That'd be awesome.
With fishing line running up and down the aisles, tickling the back of
the my laugh moment in this movie was the pit of blood and the girl sinking into excrement. The pit of blood. Just a minute, and you're just that camera just dwells, and she plops up. Oh, apocalypse my ass.
She meant descent, to say prolapse.
It's descent, descent now.
Yeah, I mean, visually, it does. It's just for every bit as striking as Apocalypse Now. I mean, it doesn't make sense. It makes no sense at all to have this giant pool of blood unless they have some kind of religion.
That's not blood. That's all excrement and all that shit. We can't eat the blood.
It's kind of Old Testament-y. Yeah, I don't know.
That's what leaks out of their septic tanks.
No, I'm telling you, when you bat, those vampire
they gotta have hemorrhoids. Yes. They really gotta have hemorrhoids.
So then the girls become aware of these creatures because they get attacked, and you know, horror ensues. But then the other secret kind of gets there's the during the middle of the fight, there's the accident.
Yes.
Yeah.
This know. One, I wrote this. Oh, down yeah. It's not just
that.
That's moment.
You know, it has that a whole other plot going, a subplot. Going
right. The subplot, right. Where Juno hears something spins around because she's been fighting these things, spins around and just right in her friend's neck.
Yeah. And up to that point, she'd been fighting off like three of them Beth. At the same time. Yeah, she
hits Beth right through the neck.
Yep.
And then just kind of leaves her there like, oh, fuck, what do I do, you know?
Even when her friend's begging her, you know, get help, go get, you know, the girl, the one that was the doctor. And she just, leaves her.
Yeah, she just asked, don't leave me alone, you know? Yep. Yeah, so that's all kinds of terrible. But that's when the girls begin through this making discoveries. They learn and discover that the creatures rely on sound to, you know, to hunt their blind. And... that's when the another big fight, but then there's the reveal. This because Beth has Juno's pendant, and there's a saying on it. You guys remember the saying?
Something about love forever.
Love every day.
Love every day.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. Every day. And it was the same one that Sarah had. So she realizes, oh, Juno and her husband were having an affair.
Yeah. I like how Sarah revealed it to her, though, when Juno's, you know, when Sarah's baiting her. She's like, what happened to the girl that got the, I can't think of the character name, but they got the pick through the neck. And she's like, she didn't make it. The creatures killed her. Mm-hmm. And then she opens her hand and the pendant's like wrapped, just sitting there in her palm. Like, fuck.
But she doesn't kill Juno.
No. She leaves her.
She maims her.
She maims her. Yeah, hits her in the knees, hits her in the legs.
So she can't move well, and knowing that she's going to be overrun by the subhumanoid cavern dwellers.
Good.
I thought
I wanted to see. I wanted this. I would. This could have been like a what's his name? Oliver Stone movie. They could have interjected the life of the cavemen, you know, right. How they had sex, you know, how they raised their babies. I think that it would have been an animation. I think that would have been funny.
Kind of like Feast.
Yeah.
As gross as Feast is, I like that. That just kind of blew me away for a second. That was funny.
And I don't know.
But there's a lot of action in this. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sizzling Bacon. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said, and then having an out of nowhere animation sequence like Kill Bill.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the production quality of this movie is really good. I think that's what makes it work in the most, you know, because all of the practical things that they do, you know, it's just pretty disgustingly, you know, good.
I had a hard time spotting any CGI.
Yeah, me too.
It looked almost 100%.
I think it was 100% practical effects.
I think it was too.
Because they did it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was saying they did it in the same studio, Pine Studios, the ones they shot Bond in Pinewood. Yeah, all the cave interiors they shot. That was all big set. Which was pretty amazing set.
Yeah. No, that's what I said. That, the practically it looked really good, you know. And there again. you know, why not have a blood pit? Jesus, I mean, that looks so cool. So,
you know, just do it. Makes no sense.
Yeah, and we can do it. And we can do the Apocalypse Now scene. Come on.
Right.
You know what? A blood pit would look good right here.
Right.
But then it gets...
The smell of the blood pit in the morning.
So Sarah, right? Sarah it is who is covered in blood. You know, right. She's been covered in blood for like a long time.
Excrement.
We could in our trying to be semi-logical, you know, that maybe that masked her a lot, you know, from the creatures or whatever. Maybe that all that did, you know.
She smells like shit.
Not good eating yet.
Oh, she smells like my shit. Oh, move
she
on.
Smells, she smells like my wife.
Move on.
This being smelled like poop, but I just figured it was Phil.
Oh, my God. I'm smelling everyone here. You guys are fucking sick.
You need more green vegetables.
Johnny, what the hell did you eat?
So anyway, go ahead. So there's the confrontation between Sarah
and she leaves and then
pick or whatever.
Yes. So when she wakes up, she bursts through the cave entrance like you know, just like the in a Princess Bride, and then she makes it.
Wondering
her car.
How could that be the egress for them to get out if she have to break through at that every time they have to get out? But anyway, go on. But wait a minute. Let's go back just a second here, Dr. Head, because Juno is left alone.
Left alone.
Right. Standing there, and you see the humanoids come toward her.
Yes.
And then then it cuts.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you hear her scream.
And then... Yeah.
Yeah. Then you hear a scream, right? And that's the last thing, because she's trying, you know, she's trying to defend off, and that's where we leave it.
But that's where I think Sarah's strategy at the end was, I could kill her quick, but after the whole deal with the husband and then her killing, even though the girl she killed, it was an accident, she lied about it. And she's the one who convinced them all it was a lightweight cave and threw the guidebook away so they wouldn't figure out it was.
Well, she's consistent, right? I mean, she was lying about her relationship.
So I figured, Sarah's like, we're not the two of us. She don't deserve to live in my mind, but I'm not going to kill her quick because I need to have time to get away. And I think that's why she kneecapped.
I think it's a more horrific
She's going to make her scream. Which is going to attract the swarm of the monsters. And then while they're distracted by her screaming and fighting, Sarah was able to climb up that mound of bones and get out.
Well, it's also a very painful way to die, being eaten alive. Yes. So I think that was also, there was some of that poetic justice.
You don't deserve a quick death.
Right, because we see Sarah, you know, has these horrific nightmares. Yes. So in a way, she's almost, like her whole life has been taken from her. She's been eaten away for the last year. So I just think I see that.
I get it.
Justice.
So she gets in her car.
I like that arc of hers where she you could tell at the beginning, you know, when she first arrived at the cabin, she doesn't want to be there. You know, even as much as she had enjoyed that in her life, she had no joy left in her life. You almost got the impression she didn't really give a shit about living in general. But then she finds her, you know, her will to survive at the very end. And then she fights those creatures off like crazy, cripples Juno to give herself time to escape. So, I mean, that's the closest thing, I guess, to an arc I picked up in this other than Juno's escape.
An arc, it's in a cave, but that bit.
Raiders of the Lost Character arc.
She
gets out. Yeah. So now she wakes up and she finds her car and she starts, you know, leaving the woods. And then she pulls over and starts like, you know, kind of breaking down. And then she vomits. And then she turns around and sees.
When they had the show, the exact, you know, go ahead.
At the moment,
I need some more cream corn.
After a truck passes, right?
Is that a fully formed?
Right, you got to see the puke. It's always good to see the puke. But then she turns around and she sees who in the cab with her, or the car with her?
Pete Barbuti.
Yes.
Oh, Pete Barbuti.
Pete Bar Bloody.
It's a Shamalama Ding Dong movie.
Yeah,
here's Juno.
Here's Juno.
Who is she?
It's Juno, all covered in blood, sitting next to her, and then she wakes up again. Now, see, this is the part that was not in the cut for the American release, and that version, of course, they had to have a happy ending because this movie is a fucking bleak ending because Sarah's left there and she wakes up and she's back down in the fucking cave, and then she hears these creatures all shriek and grow closer. But they thought, oh, it's too dark, so the cunts here and. Where, you know, whoever got this movie for the American release shaved it off, and it ends basically with her like leaving. You know, it's a happy end. Oh, she got away. And that completely changes
the tone. Yeah, isn't there a Descent 2?
There is. There is a Descent 2.
So there we go. There's the marketing right there.
It's like, well,
because you cut it. That's
the movie costs less.
Oh, now million. It's all guys.
No, the movie less. Yeah, no, it cost less than like $5 million to make, about $4.8 million, and it brought in $57 million. Nice. So it's like
awesome.
Yeah, I mean, horror films tend to do that. They're cheap to make and they make a lot of money.
If they're a success,
right. You know, but even bad horror films still usually make their budget back.
That's true.
Ask Roger. Yeah.
So I think that's probably part of it. Like, and the sequel. Has anyone seen The Descent?
I saw it once, and it was very forgettable.
So I liked it. You know, it was more of the same. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. I thought it was fun.
Don't spoil it for me. Because I'm going to go out and rent it.
But for me, the initial
it has nothing to do with that. No, it takes place in an open field.
Buying you the steel box set Blu-rays for everybody.
Yay! You get a box set.
It's just The Descent 2. It's not the box. It's not two of them.
Well, before you know, so that's kind of it. You know, my other criticism, and this is a criticism I have
Descent 2, more spelunking.
Like the action scenes, I don't like the quick edit, close up action scenes. And I understand why it has to be done a lot, but. It just doesn't appeal to me, you know.
Really popular with the time the movie came out, as far as that kind of
absolutely.
Does look good. The fight scenes
are brief and violent.
I think it's supposed to replicate that sense of violence and chaos. And
I could see
this
that.
They're frenetic. The time frame of Batman Begins, where Christopher Nolan filmed all the fight scenes and that in the shaky cam and the Bourne movie, then the shaky cam.
Well, and think about it. You're in a cave and you're only seeing what's illuminated when you're moving. Right.
I think
all the stuff is like.
Even though it was trendy, I think this was a stylish choice for here because their movie is very stylish.
Yes,
for a horror film, for a low budget horror film, some of the shots are really, you know, some of their frights are impactful. The initial car wreck, I'm like, I did not expect to see the fucking that. You know, they're really, and just the look of the film looks really beautiful.
You could talk about the color palette that they utilize in the film because they go to infrared, but then they have those wands that are kind of greenish. So you know they don't cast hardly any fucking light, but because of them, if you look at the backgrounds, there's green tint lighting, you know, in areas to define things.
Right.
Totally unrealistic, but it works really good because it makes the scene come alive.
That's it.
It's the visceral. It's that visceral visual image. That you know, I totally agree, and I agree to some of the frenetic camera work. I'm not opposed to that. Mm-hmm. I'm just opposed.
I'm not
to
a fan almost, of it either.
Almost all the time, you know.
Yeah.
I like good composed.
It's just an over. Right.
I like good composed, and you can do both. You know, and that's there.
Right.
You know,
no, I get. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's just a criticism. I think it's called lazy directing or directing within that low budget, maybe.
James Bond, Quantum of Solace did that. And it was terrible.
Oh, where they did the Bourne fight scene in the little
they're very close up. Yeah, and that's different. Yeah,
no, I get it. Cam fights.
I totally get it.
I didn't mind him as much in this though, because I do agree with Dr. Tarr that I think the reason you had to have that in close-up, because they were in such a confined space, you couldn't get a wide shot because there was just no room for it in that kind of space. And if you were able to all of a sudden zoom out to a wide shot, you wouldn't feel claustrophobic anymore.
It's claustrophobic semiotics as well.
It's almost a storytelling.
Think of LeBeau in Hogan's Heroes. Poor LeBeau.
Well, interesting fact about the glow, the phosphorescence, the green color. The crawlers originally had a skin that was phosphorescent. So that would have been cool. They would have bioluminescence might have been cool, but it was scrapped for a cheaper, because it would have been So they also what they were trying to do,
because that would have been kind of an interesting.
It was too bright and reflective in the darkened set, so they had to be made for them to blend in the shadows. So, and one more thing I thought was really great about the costumes, about the creatures. Natalie Mendoza, who plays Juno, said that when the moment came, she was the director. Had barred the film's cast from seeing the actors in full crawler makeup until their first appearance on screen. So that first time where they all run in and attack them, the girls, the women had never seen the creatures before. Some of that natural repulsion. And Natalie Mendoza said, when the moment came, I nearly wet my pants. I was running around afterwards laughing in this hysterical way and trying to hide the fact that I was pretty freaked out. Even after that scene, we never really felt comfortable with them. So it's effective. It's effective.
Yeah. That's good.
Kind of like what Ridley Scott pulled on an Alien, not letting anybody know that the chestburster was going to happen.
Yeah.
Except for John Hurt. And so to get those actual real reactions out of the rest of the actors.
Kind of like William Friedkin in The Exorcist, not letting anybody know all the shit he was going to do.
Right.
Breaking Linda Blair's back.
Yeah.
Yeah, on that scene where she's going up and down, she's screaming because that's her back broke while I was going. Yeah. But we don't know what happened, if any of that happened. on this one. But what we have is a really effective low-budget horror film.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many levels of horror. Then you also have the you know, whether it was contrived, but you also have the horror not only of dying or having a loved one pass, especially a husband and a child, that mournfulness. You also have the horror of the nightmares, and you have the horror of finding out that your friend was banging your husband. Right. You have the horror of getting lost in this cave, get the horror. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's like layers and layers of different kinds of horror, psychological horror, claustrophobia. Yeah. I mean, all kinds of things that I think this movie does really well.
It's the onion of horror.
Because I'm not claustrophobic, but I got nervous this week because I'm like, oh, maybe I think I would be claustrophobic. I just know not to go into tiny places. Sometimes a regular closet.
Oh, no, like, you're not going to get me in there.
No, I'm not going to go in that closet. It's only a door wide. I don't know.
Well, I would say if you guys haven't seen Doomsday, that is a really good movie. And it's very much like a B movie. And the way it's edited and cut, you can tell that he had a lot more freedom than what he had with this movie. Yeah. This movie felt very much like it was like a lot of money men going, we got to have this. Now we got to have this. Now it's got to be like this, you know, because like the music, all this kind of stuff does not like, that's why I didn't know it was the same guy that did that or the 2019 Hellboy. I like the 2019 Hellboy as much as I like the original one. Yeah.
Yes.
It's truer to the Hellboy comic.
Right, because the Hellboy comic is a mature comic, and the Del Toro movies, they made them PG-13 so they could sell toys. The 2019 is a rated R Hellboy, so it's way closer to the comic.
No, I get all that.
It's pretty good.
But the Doomsday is really a fun movie. I think it's intentionally like I've only got a budget. I want to do a kind of post-apocalyptic, warlord movie. And there's great scenes of somebody getting their eye popped out and somebody catching the eye, there's just all kinds of really
cool. It's a lot of fun. We should choose that. We should.
Roman Mitra's in that, correct?
Yes. It's on Max, but I don't have Max right now. So
was that Evil Dead 2 with a eyeball flying into chick's mouth. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
Love that.
That's a great scene. Got eye cam. So The Descent. Anyone else have any last words to say about the descent?
I would like to clear something up. I think we've discussed this before. The Bourne Identity movies, the first one was not shaky cam. Doug Liman had very beautiful choreographed cutting, editing, where you saw everything, and it was amazing. And then Paul Greengrass comes in and fucks everything up. I still like the movies that Paul Greengrass does. It is his style. So,
right. With the same, me too, but with the same criticism.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Well, the first Bourne movie, that fight in his apartment, that's one of my favorite movie fist fights ever. That fight's beautiful. Same thing. Good camera angle, but exactly. When Paul Greengrass comes in for two and three, all the fights are shaky cam fights, and you can't follow them.
I love the fight scenes in Civil War. Captain America and Bucky.
Yes.
Together. I guess it's that. Yeah. That reminded me a lot of The Raid. Uh-huh. Or the Raid 2. Was it Chinese? Korean?
No, they're Indonesian. Raid. The Raid.
Maybe it's Indonesia? Okay, yeah. Fucking great movie.
Both of them are great.
Yeah. Well, it was crazy balls to the wall action. And then when I saw Civil War, I was thinking, oh, they must have seen The Raid, because that's what kind of stuff that was prevalent all throughout it.
Oh, yeah.
It was big knee kicks and like using people as counterweights and stuff like that. You know, it was quite awesome. Yeah.
I like the fight scene in Mr. Vampire in the jail cell.
God,
right on the anvil.
In a long time. Or Chinese ghost story.
No, I've just been on, yeah.
Before we get out of here, if we're done with the descent, we should just say RIP to James.
James Earl Jones.
Yeah, because he just passed away. And also, I would like a shout out to John Cassaday, who also just passed away. And if you're not...
Did he really?
Yeah, he had a heart attack a few days ago.
That's news to me.
Yeah,
and I had not heard about John Cassaday. Yeah. Holy, he could not have been that old.
52.
Jesus, that's younger than me.
Yeah, he had a heart attack a week ago and never woke up, and then passed away just a couple of days ago.
Wow.
And if you're not familiar with his work, it is master work, you know, in the 20s.
He's the one who started the fully defined chainmail on Captain America.
Yep.
Early 2000s.
Well, that's the funny thing is when they were talking about his achievements, I'm like, I've never read that Captain America. So now I still have something I can look forward to go look at that. But
it's a good run.
The Warren Ellis, if you don't, he has his weekly email that he sends out. Warren Ellis does. And he sent one out. It's called Orbital Operations. And he had a beautiful just talk about John Cassaday and how he goes, you'll notice that nobody will claim that they discovered him because he was so good that it was inevitable that he would be discovered, you know. And he talks about how he had met him and that it didn't work out, but then he got in touch with him in terms of Planetary. And he said, the only thing John Cassaday said to him, he goes, I just don't want to, the reason I hate a monthly book is I don't want to have to draw the same thing over and over. And Warren Ellis is like, I got something for you, you know.
Right.
And then he mentions the fact that Planetary, if you've ever seen the original covers for each issue, they're completely different style, you know. Yep. And John Cassaday got to do all of those. And it's funny because I just went back and read the Astonishing X-Men, which he did.
Right, and his Astonishing X-Men work is noticeably different from his Captain America work, yep. Right? Yeah. Constantly evolving.
Yeah,
huge talent.
Well, there was a cover he did recently, everybody just, the internet that was following comics just blew up saying how terrible it was, and he must be phoning it in and just not doing. And I looked at it and I'm like, he must be sick. You know what I mean? Right. He must be sick, or there's something wrong with him, because this is not, you know, you could see the style there, but you're like, this is not him. There's something obviously wrong here, you know. And then like 6 months later, you know, he's now
gone.
He's gone. So, but yeah, check that stuff out, man. It's amazing. That whole run on the Astonishing X-Men is a really good. Joss Whedon is a really good comic book writer. And then Cassaday does not phone a page in. And that's why, I guess, that's what Ellis was saying, is they went to a 6 week cycle, you know, for Planetary. So he would have 6 weeks to do everything, because he does inks and pencils and
stuff. Planetary is brilliant.
Oh, it's one of my
all around.
All-time
all
favorites.
Around.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of my all time favorites. Cool. I just wanted to mention those guys because, you know, James Earl Jones, obviously. Yeah. Most people know
him.
James Earl Jones, gigantic in genre.
Yeah. Well, most people know him as the voice of Darth Vader, but I remember him from, what was the Roots? Wasn't it Roots that he was in? Or
Betty and Barney Hill.
There was something, you know, back then that he was in.
But he was in so much.
Yeah.
I remember probably the first experience, even before definitely Darth Vader, was it was in the movie about Betty and Barney Hill.
Yeah.
The UFO people. Yeah. Yeah. I remember being terrified.
And Conan.
Watching it.
Oh, well, that's Thulsa Doom.
Thulsa Doom,
right. Thulsa Doom, man.
The Riddle of Steel.
Yeah.
And possibly his most famous
role. And he did breathe heavy.
The time he played himself on The Big Bang Theory.
Right. Which was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. Yes. That was great.
You're killing me, Smalls. The baseball
that's
movie.
That's right. The Sandlot.
Sandlot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Field of Dreams in there, too.
Yeah, Field of Dreams.
Such a great actor.
Good actor.
One of the most unique voices ever, you know?
Oh, man.
Well, when he showed up in the movie, you were always happy that he showed up in the movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had one of those voices. I was going to say, there's like him and, just
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman is another one.
I wonder if there's any James Earl Jones ASMR out there. You know, we could probably put
Tarantino's voice.
Woody Allen.
Hey, do you have like a very young sister or something at home? I'd like to go look in your sister's bedroom and make sure she has sleeping.
If I told her she had a beautiful body, would you hold it against
her? Does she have any dirty underwear like laying around that maybe, I don't know, I can go get?
Now I'll make it intellectual because I'll be reciting Jean-Paul Sartre while I'm...
Sartre, sniff these underwear, Sartre. That's funny. Witty.
New York.
Wait.
I'm full of angst and anxious energy.
We Quentin Tarantino as James Earl Jones.
I'm sorry. What's your name?
Look here. I'm going to tell you something. You're not going to be ready for it. I'm going to tell you. But look. Just wait. It'll all make sense in a minute. So anyway, I'm your dad. I'm your dad. Totally your dad.
Okay.
I know, it's fucked up, right?
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Son!
With some real music played by real musicians, specifically for Professor Feather, you have been listening to
Radio.
Insane Radio on jet@gmail.com. That's our email. Okay. Insane Radio.
We're plastered everywhere.
InsaneRadio.com. Go there. Listen to the multitude of episodes we have. We're getting right up there.
Apple Podcasts as well.
What's that?
We are on Apple Podcasts as well.
We're on Apple Podcasts as well.
That's where I listen to
Spotify.
It.
Spotify.
Yep. We're on Spotify too, yes. Oh, yeah. But anyway, and then there's Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather's Psycho Cinema, which you can see some select movies on YouTube now. If you just go to
very select.
Tarr and Feather's Psycho Cinema.
The choice cuts.
It's a choice list. Very choice. Very
cuts,
choice list.
Cuts?
It's
did
a
you say
choice,
cuts?
Choice, choice list.
It's choice. Choice.
Moist.
Very tight. It's very tight.
We just toit, like saying toit.
Speaking of toit, heavy metal hoil.
It's also toit.
It's wet and toit. You know where you can find us.
It's
we're everywhere.
Yeah. I only think. Hey, I started a YouTube channel where I just rant to make Republicans sad, and that's The Nerdery 1967 on YouTube.
Okie dokie.
Gadfly will be stripping
until the election
and regretting.
Got anything else going, Sizzlin' Bacon? Anything else going on?
If you want to see my artwork, Webhead62 on Instagram. Post all my artwork right there on Instagram. If you want to see what I'm up to art wise.
Did you do something at some club or something recently? Did you do some open mic thing or something? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have a Cindy's place. I'm in Medina on West Smith Road. We do an acoustic open mic night Wednesday from 8 to midnight. There'll be guitars there if you want to sing. You play an instrument, an acoustic instrument, or if you don't want to bring a guitar, they'll be there. And I host it, and it's basically like unplugged karaoke.
Not Medina, Spain.
Medina, Ohio.
Medina, Ohio.
Oh, my okay. Medina.
I went to Spain and you Medina. Went there, Sizzlin' Bacon.
It's not Medina, Spain. It's Medina, Ohio.
Yeah. Oh, Medina.
Funky cold Medina, Ohio.
Diddling the Medina.
Well, the Midnight Gadfly has stopped donating plasma because apparently they don't make those television screens anymore.
I ran out! Oh, I'm sorry, it's a disused.
Sony said those
texts
were no longer coming in.
A lot of lead in my system. Although it's not LED, I guess. It's not LED.